KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, featuring stories of people of the valley, produced by media communications and journalism students at Fresno State, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning, I'm David Chavez.
And I'm Talia Redondo. Thank you for joining us this morning for Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, stories about people of the Central Valley. This morning, we'll be talking about overcoming adversity.
We'll hear from people who've made amazing changes in their lives, and they'll tell you how they did it.
And we'll learn about the benefits and services offered by the Fresno State Fitness and Rec Center.
Also, wrestling is back at Fresno State.
But first, fitness.
Many students find it hard to balance school and a job, while also trying to find time to work out. Tristan Lewis has a story of a young man who bases his whole life around fitness.
5 times a week, you can find Fresno State student Chong Bang working out at the Fitness and Rec Center on campus. One day, he was exercising when something stuck out to him.
I saw that they were having open tryouts for a new fitness instructor, and I was really apprehensive because I'm very a shy person, and I was like, oh, I'll never be able to do something like that. I get in front of people, talk, and, you know, really motivate them to really work out. So I left the gym, actually. And then an hour later, I actually came back because I was like, you know what? You have nothing to lose. And then I came back. I was there for about 3 hours just trying out and then essentially got hired on the spot. So after that, I just kind of went through training and then started teaching afterwards.
He teaches a body pump and cycling class on campus 4 days a week.
I actually enjoy it. I always tell people that every time I step on that stage, I still get butterflies in my stomach because I love it so much. It's really one of the joys of having to come here and then enjoy what you do working out and, you know, having people love it and then telling you that they love it at the end as well.
He has been motivating and getting students to break a sweat at the fitness center for the past 2.5 years.
I see people and they always tell me how much they love it and how much change they see in themselves. So that's why I love it so much.
Even other trainers and instructors at the rec center, like Summer Robinson, notice how encouraging Bang is during class.
The good thing about Chong is, you know, he knows his music, he knows his choreography, his tempo, he knows what he's doing, and he knows how to push you. So if you're starting to lag, you know, you're spinning down the hill, and, oh, you know, it's getting hard, so you start slowing down. Nope, speed up, and he'll try to motivate you to get you to where you need to be.
But it wasn't always like this.
Long story short, I used to be super overweight. And then I actually decided to change my lifestyle, essentially, back in 2013.
Vang has had issues with his weight since he was young, and he never really noticed there was anything wrong until one day back in high school during one of his nursing classes.
We would take our blood pressure, and then it would be like 150 to like 90 or something like that. And they're like, did you drink coffee this morning? I'm like, no, because I don't drink coffee. And they're like, were you running? I'm like, no, I've been just sitting here the entire time. And then they're like, they might be a mistake or something, you know? And they did it again. It was still the same.
But still, he did not really notice he needed to make a lifestyle change until one day he had his aha moment and knew something needed to be done.
One day I was driving in my car and just looking back at my life and just knowing that I had found out that I had scoliosis really later in my life as well. So then it made it really hard for me to walk, essentially, because it's right down in my lower back. So then it's kind of like where my hip stabilizes. If it's not stabilized, then it's really hard for me to walk. There's a point in my life where I would wake up in the morning and I couldn't walk, or I couldn't even bend down to just tie my shoelace because it was hurting so bad. And that's kind of like when I say, you know, I needed a life change. That's kind of like what started rolling the ball for me.
Once he had made that realization, he tried to get his best friend, Brittany Johnson, involved in his plan to make a change.
I mean, I remember the summer that he said he was going to lose weight, and we kind of like joked and we're like, we're not going to stick through with it.
But against their ideas, he stuck through with it, and he saw his health change in a better direction.
Started very little, you know, changing my eating habits and then started working out, actually. And in a span of about a year, I lost about 90 pounds.
But when he was first starting out, he didn't really know what to do or how to do it. He first turned to reading online articles about health and nutrition to figure out what he should be eating and what he shouldn't be eating.
Didn't know what healthy eating looks like. I didn't know what it was.
But once he figured out portion control and the right things to eat for his body, he instantly started seeing results. That's when he knew he needed to start getting into working out.
I just did a lot of running at the beginning because it was right in the smack middle of summer, essentially. And I didn't know that the rec center was open, so I didn't utilize it. So I just basically ran around my neighborhood, even though it was really hot, so I'd run at night.
He would try and set goals for himself.
And I would just do like maybe 10 minutes at a time. And then it just slowly went up to 20 minutes and then 30 minutes. And then it just kind of, I just did about a 30-minute run every day until school began.
He then noticed he hit a plateau in his weight. He wasn't seeing a difference on the scales anymore, even though he was still constantly working out.
And it really bummed me out a lot because I was like, I've been working so hard, yet nothing has been changing. So that's kind of like when I did more research into, oh, maybe I should incorporate this. And it was just online articles I was reading, whether it was from bodybuilding.com or just any fitness people that I follow online already. They have a bunch of blog articles that they do. So I started reading up on that and then doing just the science behind of how food works and how muscle growth and metabolism.
Shortly after he started going to the fitness center and adding weightlifting into his fitness regimen, he saw the weight dropping on the scales again. But still, he did not see a huge difference in his appearance.
I would see the scale drop in numbers, but then I would look at myself in the mirror and go, I look the same. And then months go by and I'm like, I look the same again, but I see the weights dropping, but I see no difference in visually. So what happened was, I had gone to a football game here on campus, and then one of my friends actually took a picture of us, and then she sent that picture to me, and then I was like, my mind was blown, because I was like, because since I started and since that picture was taken, I've never actually taken a picture of myself, like full body, like I would take like selfies or whatever, but I never took like a full body picture, and then I compared the two pictures, and I was just mind blown.
Even though there was a noticeable difference in his appearance, his friends still saw him as the same old Chong.
His personality is the same. I think now he just has a little bit more structure when it comes to eating habits and exercising. He's a really big advocate of that now.
Other instructors use his story to motivate clients to make a healthy change.
It's definitely inspiring that obviously it's never too late to start. You know, some people might think, oh, well, I'm in my 20s, so I'll just, you know, hang out here. But it is hard, right, to be kind of set in your habits and to make a big change. So I definitely have a lot of respect for being able to do that.
He even inspires his friends to make a change.
I definitely go back and I'm active. I think one of the things that he really encourages me is that it's not about the weight loss, it's just about being healthy and active. So I like to think of that more than actually the numbers that I'm losing.
Even with all he has accomplished, he still continues to strive for more.
It's always one of the things I want to do is run a marathon or do a, what do they call, a triathlon, but the only thing is I can't swim. So then that cuts out one third of basically what I can actually do. So one of the goals is essentially to learn how to swim first before I actually do that. But I do want to run a marathon.
But I'm sure with all he has accomplished, he will have no problem learning how to swim and completing in a triathlon or marathon. And he has a message for those wanting to get into making a healthy lifestyle change.
It's because I wanted this lifestyle. I wanted to change my health as much as I wanted to breathe. That's how I was mentally able to push myself to keep going.
If there's anybody looking to shed a few pounds, all it takes is a little motivation and some steps in the right direction. Tristan Lewis, Fresno State Focus, Radio Edition.
From a healthful lifestyle to recovering from living dangerously, falling into any addiction can be easy. Getting out is where people struggle the most. I talked with Tyler Friesen about his journey from addiction to recovery.
My name is Tyler. I'm 30 years old, and I'm sober.
Tyler has been sober for almost 2 years, and while the road to being so has been very tough, but not only for him, for his family as well. His mother, Susan, says she remembers what Tyler was like as a child.
Oh my gosh, he was, he was my firstborn, so he, very, very, very bright, just this brilliant kid, had a memory that he could just remember anything and everything, and so he always was really looking to learn new things.
At the age of 11, Tyler was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which was a major change to the family because he was now insulin dependent for the rest of his life. But from a young age, Tyler remembers always feeling a bit different.
I started using drugs at a very young age. I think I was 14 or 15. I started smoking cigarettes, and which led to weed, and which just kind of began the process. But I don't think that's where I noticed I had a problem, because I would become obsessed with things at a very young age. I remember being like 10 years old, hanging out with my uncles, and we'd be making each other pass out, right? So we'd have each other hold our breath and like breathe until we're lightheaded, and then push each other up on the wall until we passed out. I felt for a moment I was touching this other reality that was different. And I don't know, I think from a very young age I was always uncomfortable in my own skin. I don't know why, and I don't think I'll ever really know why. I just always remember feeling a little different. You know, I'd look around and compare myself to other people, in usually very self-condemning ways, in ways where I would see myself as not good enough, you know, I not a part of.
During that time, Susan began to notice changes in Tyler's behavior.
I would say around 14, I had a younger brother that was that was 5 years older than Tyler was, and Tyler really looked up to him, and he had some, you know, drug issues. And so I don't know if Tyler, I think he maybe kind of got introduced that way, but I started seeing, you know, little things that were concerning right about the time when he became, you know, 14, 15, just little areas of things, you know. But I always believed him, so he would, you know, he would come home and I would believe his stories. So I didn't, you know, I thought things were off, and I was kind of a little bit insane, but he was my first child, so I just didn't have any reason to not believe his stories. So even though he was sneaking out, he would have, you know, I can remember one day he had hit himself on the head and had kind of a cut on it over his eye or something, and he'd said he fell out of his bed and hit his head. And I found out years later he had snuck out of the house and, you know, ran into a tree.
Susan says there were things Tyler would do that made her concerned, and she knew there was something wrong.
He would be, you know, out all night. You know, he wouldn't come home, or he would cut school, or money would go missing. Things would go missing. I think he was selling his things. School became a real problem. It was real obvious. It started showing up in school because at one point it came to the point where he wasn't going to graduate from high school.
They sent me to rehab when I was 17 years old. I was there for 5 months, inpatient, so off to Utah, where I completed high school in a rehab. And then the moment I got back from it, the first thing I did was call my buddies and smoke some weed.
He just learned new habits. He immediately got picked up for shoplifting. There were just new habits that arose. So he just came home worse, actually. So it didn't really take, didn't work, you know. He'd spent 5 months in rehab, and it was $30,000. It was like $5,000 a month to send him there. So it was devastating to have him come home and have him be worse.
I had a problem being sober. I felt like life would lose its meaning. Like no excitement would be there. There would be nothing worthwhile. That life became just completely devoid of passion and that's what would happen when I tried to do life without drugs. I would eventually hit this point where life would become so meaningless that I had one of two options: kill myself or do drugs.
He had gotten hospitalized, and we found out that he was on meth and really hardcore drugs. And so, but then he seemed to get better, so that's what he would do. He would get better, and then he would get worse.
There came a time where Tyler just exhausted all his resources. He had no family to turn to, no money, and no home. For a long period of time, he was living in his car. Then he was just going around from house to house. And then there was a time where he just had nowhere to stay.
There just came a time where I remember throwing up my hands in a metaphorical way, just giving up, just kind of surrendering. And the surrendering process is for me, acknowledging the fact that I don't know what it takes to get better. And there, I hope there's something more than me. In my case, it turned out to be God that can help me.
Tyler says, as soon as he had an open mind and was willing to do something, the right people showed up in his life.
So the way it worked is I was riding my bike and I needed water and I knocked on someone's door. And this was after a long run of just having no... I got kicked out of the rehab that my grandma got me into, that I was trying to get better in. And so I was completely without help. And I was riding my bike. I needed water, and I stopped off at an old friend's house hoping he'd be home to give me water. And his roommate was home. And he happened to be a recovered alcoholic who had been in just as low of a place as I had. And he invited me in and started talking to me about what he did to get better.
He got involved with AA, and he got a sponsor, and I started seeing this whole shift in who he was as a person. I mean, he got off the drugs, he started working a 12-step program, he started, his whole life changed.
Tyler has been a part of AA for 3 years, but not only that, his mother Susan also started going to meetings and getting help herself.
You know, when you are living with somebody that has an addiction, or not living with them, but you have a family member that has an addiction, you have an addiction to also. There's that alcohol or those drugs affect you just as much as they affect that person. But I also started doing a 12-step program myself and getting help. And the more he and I are in this 12-step program together, the closer we get. Our relationship is so much better today. I mean, I'm actually grateful for everything we went through, and I wouldn't have told you that because it was 12 years of me, you know, crying almost every night, of just being scared all the time, constantly afraid of what was going to happen to him and where his life was going to end up. And today, I mean, I'm so grateful for where he is, because he's amazing.
And it has since repaired all the trust in my family. I now have a house key to my parents' house. I visit them all the time. They trust me to come over and feed their dogs, and you know what I mean? We laugh and love each other, and it's just incredible. We've never had a relationship like this. They come to me for advice. They respect me and they look up to me. My mother calls me and talks to me about her problems and respects what I have to say about them. You know, and it's amazing, because at one point in my life, she looked at me and said she wanted nothing to do with me.
He's just, he's just such a different person.
College is a place where, at one point or another, you will be exposed to alcohol and the dangers of it.
According to the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, the NIAAA, 60% of college students ages 18 to 22 drank alcohol in the past month, and 2 out of 3 binge drink. A study conducted by University of Minnesota concluded that some of the main reasons students drink is because it makes it easier to meet new people, it relaxes them, and helps them make more friends.
I like to drink because it makes me feel good with just the vibe itself, and you know, it just feels right.
I just like something to relax, to go out with friends. just like social.
It brings people together. Like I like everything behind it.
Although drinking can be fun, there are some big risks and big consequences that come with it. Stephanie Annette is a registered dietitian at Fresno State, and she says that pacing drinks and eating while drinking helps avoid these risks.
You know, of course, the consequences are going to increase with the amount of alcohol. Moderate, you know, consumption of alcohol, one or two drinks a day in a healthy person, we don't see that many consequences with it. But there can be some consequences to your body. You know, your liver has to detoxify alcohol. So among, you know, populations that drink, we can see, you know, increased incidences of liver disease. So different organs in the body, your liver, your heart, your pancreas, can suffer some damage. There is some data that says certain cancers, esophageal cancer, stomach cancer, breast cancer rates perhaps might increase with alcohol consumption. And it's also a factor too in accidents. Not just drinking and driving, but, you know, accidents in general. Also, too, with crimes such as sexual assault, there can be, connection with alcohol and those sorts of things.
Miguel Ferrer, a fourth-year student at Fresno State, says he has plenty of experiences when alcohol put his life and the life of his friends at risk.
A few years ago when I was in high school, we were at this Halloween party, and we had a designated driver, but he got drunk, so it was the next soberest person had to drive, and so he drove us home. He was driving us home. We were in Kingsburg, and we were driving through town, and he had his high beams on, and he was swerving a little bit, and when we were driving down one of the main roads, the car that was coming towards us flashed us to take off the high beams, and the driver didn't take off the high beams, so when the car passed us, it ended up being the cop. When the cop asked whose open container that was, the driver, he took the blame for the beer. The cop took him out of the car, did the alcohol testing on him, breathalyzed him, and then they wanted to check the car for a reason. And then when they opened the trunk, there was two guns in the back, which the driver didn't know about because it was actually his uncle's car that we borrowed to go out that night. So when that happened, the cops put us at gunpoint and made us all put our hands on our head in the car and took us out one by one. My friend got a DUI. The driver ended up getting a DUI because he was still drunk from driving from the party. The guy that was in the back of me got a seatbelt ticket because he didn't have a seatbelt on. He was sitting next to me. I was also drunk, but we didn't get any tickets.
He says that day changed the way he now drinks. And he will always assure he has a designated driver that remains sober and will never get in a car with somebody that has been drinking.
The cops had every reason to shoot us or to just point the guns at us. Because they didn't know, if they found guns in the trunk, there could have been guns in the car that they didn't know of. And if we were moving, then, you know, they could have shot us. And I was just scared.
There are ways to avoid risking accidents. Assigning a designated driver, calling for a ride, or setting an alcohol limit before you begin to drink. The NIAAA says that each year about 700,000 students ages 18 to 24 are assaulted by another student who has been drinking, 97,000 students experience alcohol-related sexual assault, and 1 in 4 college students report alcohol affecting their academics. Jackie Espinoza, also a student at Fresno State, says she notices the behavior of some of her peers.
I've seen kids just overdo it where they're like drunk every day of the week.
Jay Padua, also a student at Fresno State, says he too notices the effects of alcohol in some of his own friends.
You know, like drinking every single day and, you know, just like people not being there mentally. And that's something that I can never do in my life. Like, you know, be addicted to drinking.
The Diversified Intervention Group says some of the signs of alcoholism are drinking often to de-stress, neglecting responsibilities, using alcohol in dangerous situations, getting into legal problems because of drinking, and continuing to drink despite having relationship or family problems.
You know, a person certainly that is drinking, you know, more than a moderate amount of alcohol, 1 or 2 drinks per day. People that, you know, are kind of losing control when they're drinking of the amount they have. Binge drinking is usually defined as being over, you know, four drinks within a 2-hour period for women or 5 drinks for men in a 2-hour period. So, you know, consuming excessive amounts of alcohol too, needing alcohol to function. So, for example, a person is to the point where it's like in the morning you have to have a drink to kind of get up and get going. And then there's the addiction here too. If a person begins to experience withdrawals, you know, I've talked to people that they said they knew that, you know, if they tried to stop drinking, that they begin to have some unpleasant physical side effects, that they need to have some drinks to do that, to be able to function. So they're getting to the addiction aspect of it.
For those students that suffer or think they may suffer from alcoholism or drug abuse, there is help that Fresno State offers for free.
If students come into the health center, we of course have medical services. We have psychological services. Our counseling center can help with, if you know, a student, for example, feels like, I wonder, you know, I don't seem to be drinking more than people around me, but I'm feeling maybe I have some issues with alcohol. Come in, talk to somebody. So there are people you can certainly talk to. I mean, we also have the Bulldogs in Recovery support group for students that are in recovery from alcohol or drug abuse, that there is some specialized help for them. So there is help, definitely help available. We can also connect people to community resources too, to help them out.
Bulldogs in Recovery is Fresno State's version of an Alcoholics Anonymous program. They meet every week and their meetings are open to all students. Students who deal with alcoholism are not alone. This group provides a safe place for students dealing with similar situations and support needed to succeed in their college careers. When drinking alcohol, it is important to be aware of the risks and consequences. Judith Saldivar, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
As Bulldog Wrestling makes its way back to the Valley, Alexis Govea had the chance to talk to Fresno State's head coach, Troy Steiner, and to find out his thoughts on the new beginning.
Oh, it was 1981 through 2006. Great times, you know. It was back in the days where, you know, wrestling's a hotbed in this town, and still is. And
that's the voice of Dennis Allen DeLito, former head coach for Fresno State Wrestling. Now fast forward to 10 years later, there's a new guy in town. Troy Steiner is head coach as Bulldog Wrestling makes its big return at Fresno State for the 2017-18 season.
This is not my program. This is their program, and they fought hard to bring this thing back. So let's support it now that we got it back, because I'm here to guide it for however long that is. You know, if it's 15 years, if it's 5 years, well, you know, whatever they give me to run it. But it's their program, and I, now that they've fought this hard to bring it back, now let's support it. And I know if we do that, if we can get everyone reunited and reconnected with this community, that we can do great things.
Steiner was also a wrestler himself. A star athlete at Iowa, the former Hawkeye was a four-time All-American.
First went to college, I didn't know if I even belonged at that level. You know, and this is definitely a defining moment. When I knew I belonged there. I knew I was at that level. But I think there comes a point in everyone's career where there's a defining moment. And I don't know, some guys it'll be the first year, some guys it'll be the second year before they hit that or they realize that. But it's to try to get them to realize that right away.
He racked up 148 wins and only 13 losses in the 134 and 142 pound weight classes. He was a member of three national championship teams from 1991 to 93 and won the 1992 NCAA Division I National Championship in the 142-pound weight class. Steiner's last coaching job was at Oregon State, and he says one specific goal at Fresno State is to prepare the team physically and from a tactical standpoint.
Once they're here and they step on the mat and represent Fresno State, I expect them to compete. And if they do that, they'll give themselves the best chance to win. A lot of it is just getting them used to the practices and the grind of the college season. And it's maybe the type of practices that I expect. And getting them used to the workload. And then besides that, we're going to start working with them on the mental side of the things. We're doing some mental skills training and stuff like that, because I feel that's a big part of it as well. And then you're always trying to help them on the nutritional aspect of it. There's so many parts that go into it. You know, wrestling is a huge part of it, but there's other things that you got to work as well. And it's just a process. It doesn't happen overnight. And the more time you can spend preparing, the better.
Fresno State dropped the wrestling program back in 2006. Steiner says as it makes its return for many Central Valley lovers, he has his eyes on the process and getting better every day.
When we start winning championships and that depends on how the process goes. If we're doing the right things and each and every day, and that's what we got to focus on. And the winning and losing takes care of itself.
Any last words?
No, go dog.
For Fresno State Radio Edition, I'm Alexis Govea.
Next week on Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, we'll go to Strummer's Nightclub in downtown Fresno and meet some of the artists.
And now that we know who will be in the White House next year, we'll talk with a Muslim student about her expectations and fears.
Fresno State Focus Radio Edition is produced by Professor Faith Sidlow. Our stories and interviews are produced and edited by Tristan Lewis, Tyler Bartlam, Brittany Souza, Alexis Govea, Judith Saldivar, and Edmer Archila, who is also our sound engineer. Music by Kevin McLeod from Incompetech.
This program is produced in collaboration with 90.7 KFSR. For Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, I'm Talia Redondo.
And I'm David Chavez. Have a great morning.
KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, Saturday mornings at 5. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.